down Kennedy, feeling like a boss. Pinky ring on, got me looking like a don. Riding through the town, paint gloss on the car, blacked out the window, smoke.
Yes, sir. Welcome, everybody. We're here back at the HuffPost Podcast. It's your boy, One Day. We're so excited. We have an amazing guest, Jersey City, Hudson County, from the Heights to Waterfront, from Greenville to Journal Square, from Bergen Lafayette, Paula's Hook, Marion, the West Side, everybody pulling up from Ocean Ave. Are you guys ready? Because we have a very important person in the building today. Now, listen, he came up from Ward E, and today he answers to all six wards now. Born in Millburn, raised on public policy, sharpened his skills in St. Louis, Chicago, and Boston. Family roots in this county go back generations before he was even a thought. A school teacher, a cancer survivor, a professor who taught kids at taught your kids at NJCU, St. Peter's, Hudson Community College. The man who told Airbnb to please keep your $4 million. The man who told the golf course, we don't need you at Cave and Point. And the man who walked in City Hall, looked at the books and said, just give me a dollar salary. Ladies and gentlemen, please, with further ado, round of applause for our mayor of Jersey City, Mr. James Sullivan. Yes.
Thank you. One Day, thank you. That's a great intro, man. I appreciate
it. I
love that.
That was a good one. Well, welcome, man. I appreciate
thank you, man.
It. Thank you so much. This is our third episode for
there
the HuffPost Podcast, and you're setting the standard.
Look at
the
bar that. Is there high you go. Now. There you go. I appreciate
all you mayors in Hudson County.
That's right.
You better come.
I want to see Brian Stack right here next.
Oh my God,
Mayor Stack, you got to be here.
Well, Brian Stack will have an audience of abuelitas in the background too, because they love abuelitas. Love Brian Stack.
Yeah.
But welcome, Mayor. There's so much to talk about. Yeah. We have you for a limited time, but I definitely, like I told you before we started, I want the people to get to know who James is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody knows Mayor Solomon, but then there's James.
Yeah.
You know, you are a human being. You are a man who is also a family man, a father.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any siblings or anything?
I got one older brother. He's 18 months older than me. Yeah.
Awesome. So you're a brother, you know what I mean? And you're a son to amazing parents. So talk to me a bit. Let's go back to February 18, 1984.
Okay. There you go.
Right. Millburn, New Jersey, Essex County. Correct.
Yeah, Essex. You got it.
What was your parents like? What were they doing before you were born?
So I got a great story with my parents. My parents are actually named Adam and Eve.
No way.
That is 100% true.
Adam and Eve Solomon.
Adam and Eve Solomon. Yeah, my mom kept her name. So it was Adam Solomon Eve Slater.
Wow.
Yeah. And I joke with people that they met apple picking, but that's a
that's
whenever
a
like
one,
so the politics and the personal. So like whenever I like introduce myself at a church, I always introduce myself with like, hey, my parents were named Adam and Eve.
Wow,
they met apple picking, and then people laugh. I'm like, that last part isn't true, but they really were named Adam and Eve.
That's amazing.
You know, my thing is I was blessed to have two wonderful parents who cared deeply and were deeply invested in me and my brother.
Yeah.
You know. When I was a little bit older, they got divorced. So, I mean, that had a big impact on my life. And just thinking about, you know, a young person, how do you process that
same
when your parents
here,
split, when you're about like 10, when they really split?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. And so I think that is definitely impactful to me. And it's part of what guides me as a father now.
Yeah.
Of, you know, knowing how great it was to have two parents that were invested in loving and caring and committed.
For sure.
But not being able to see them all the time.
Correct.
So for me, when I'm not doing politics, my life is being a dad.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's corny, but it is the thing that drives me.
Corny, man. I love being a dad, so I know where you're
from. How old are your kids?
My son is 10.
10, beautiful.
So right now we're heavy in soccer, we're tournaments, driving me crazy. I want Fortnite points, V-Bucks, all that. You know?
So we're about to get there. So I have three daughters, or three girls, they're six and four. But they're going to dance competitions this year.
Oh.
So we're about to, this is the first year, we're going to hit the road. We're going to go to like tournaments across the competitions. It's going to be new.
Are you like friends with like the parents
like
in the group too?
You do, but it'll be new now because we're travel together.
Oh yeah.
And I'm a sports guy. I was a hockey player, I was a football player.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like dance is all new for me. This is like a whole new world, girl dad. It's like all different, but.
Well, that's awesome. So, so your parents, Adam and Eve,
yes,
which
Adam
is amazing.
Eve.
I think that's an amazing fun fact for the.
Correct.
Jersey City mayor quiz at a bar or something.
Yeah.
But okay, so we go back. Your family also has a history in Hudson County and Kearney, correct?
Yes.
Like, what stories did you hear about your family being
sure.
in Hudson County?
So you know, both my mom's side and my dad's side, like they were the Ellis Giant. They started with the Ellis Island generation.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So they came from Europe in like 1900s, 1910s. You know, came to Liberty State Park, what we call Liberty State Park now, the railroad terminal. And then on my dad's side, they settled in Kearney. Okay. So my great-grandparents are buried in the Jewish cemetery that's technically in North Arlington, but it's right across Route 7.
Okay.
So if you know that, and then the Catholic cemetery is on
the
other
side. Yes, I've seen that one, yeah.
Yeah, and then they were in between Newark and Kearney, and then on my mom's side, they were in Newark. So they grew up in the South Ward in Newark. And then, you know, that was sort of where the Hudson Route started. And then, you know, the family left, and so I always tell the story of how I came back. It was my wife. So,
yeah. You
know, Gabby and I met in graduate school. We were dating, really liked each other, and I was in Boston, and she was in Connecticut. Okay. And then she got a job in Newark. She worked for Newark Public Schools.
Oh, nice.
And she was like, okay, I like this important job for me. I'm going to move down to Jersey. And I was like, okay, like, it's a time in our relationship to really, like it's like put up or shut up. Like, are we going to do this? So I was like, okay, I'm going to leave my job in Boston. I'm going to join you in Jersey.
And then That's true love right there.
It is true love.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, nowadays, I don't know if I'll take a bus to go see my girl.
Just make sure she doesn't watch the podcast now.
She knows. I'll go. I'll travel the world three times for you, baby. Exactly. I love it.
Exactly.
But that's an amazing love story. Yeah. So she was the one,
and she was the first person, and she was like, James, I fucking love Jersey City.
Yeah.
And it reminded her, she grew up in Brooklyn in the 1980s, so obviously different than the Brooklyn of today.
She's a tough one.
So she was like, look, this reminds me of this, like, diverse, chill, down-to-earth place, and, like, this is where I want to be. So that's what brought us here.
Oh, my God. And she's Puerto Rican?
She's Puerto Rican, half Polish, half Puerto Rican.
Oh,
she's Brooklyn, but that's a Jersey City combo, right?
That is right.
Polish,
there.
Puerto Rican.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we're, you know, we got Puerto Rican parade on Sunday.
Yes.
Like, it's great for our girls. Like, we're like, hey, you know, so you got some Boricuas. You gotta embrace the Puerto Rican world and culture. And Jersey City's got such a great Puerto Rican community here. It's like awesome to have them here.
I'm so excited. I love Puerto Rico. I go to Puerto Rico at least 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm addicted.
Yeah.
And the best part, no passport. So
it is.
That's why it keeps coming. I keep going back.
Yeah.
So going back to Milburn, let's go back to Milburn because I'm a very curious guy. Yeah. I love learning the origin story.
Yeah.
How Spider-Man got his webs out of his wrist.
Yeah.
How did Superman come from kryptonite? You know what I mean? So you grew up in Milburn. Yeah. How was Milburn during your time, like in the 80s?
It's a great question. So, you know, for me, you know, for folks, most folks probably know familiar with Milburn, nice suburb, right?
Yeah.
So, to one sense, it's a great place to grow up, right? You can go run around the street and never think twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have really wonderful friends around you.
Yeah.
Great schools, right? All that is real and was there. And I understand our parents were there. But for me, I felt like it was a bubble too. And I think when you're young, when you're 10, you're 11, you don't know that. You're just a kid. You're going to go play a little league. You go to school.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, particularly got into like high school years, I started to say, hey, like, you know, this isn't the world. This is just a little bubble. And, you know,
but how did you find that out? Like, did you date somebody or like a friend was from another culture?
It's a really good question. I think it's just being naturally curious, right?
Cool.
I think it's doing stuff like, you know, just all of a sudden you're like, I was interested in government. I was interested in the world. I wanted, you know, so you're going to New York, you're going to Newark, and all of a sudden you're just like, hey,
you
the world.
You start getting exposed.
Yeah, you start getting exposed. And I think it does require like some group of curiosity, right? A lot of people just never leave what they know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was important for me. And I think the other thing that I saw too is just, you know, focus on things that didn't matter a ton. Right. Like, hey, what people care about, what car you drive, what college you go to. Like at the end of the day, that stuff isn't what matters in life. And I think I started to feel that as well. So for me, it was like, hey, as soon as I was 18, I'm like, I want to leave. I want to get as far away from home as I can. So I just went to college in California.
Yeah.
I went across the country. And that was really just to like that curiosity piece that like, hey, like I got to see something different. I got to always be pushing. I got to be exploring. Always got to be finding some, you know, new part because that's how you learn who you are. Is by putting yourself in situations which maybe you aren't as comfortable in.
Were your parents like nervous you leaving the California?
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Because my mom didn't even want to see me go to the next town.
100%. No, they absolutely like wanted me to like be local, stay close.
Yeah,
they were like, you're never gonna come back.
Like, yeah, well, you're gone.
God, and I will say the blessing of coming for me being home is my father passed away in 2008.
So he's
been gone for a little bit. But you know, my mom helping with my kids is the biggest blessing in my life.
Yeah.
You know, both just like from a parent perspective, just like we need help, but also just to see them build this really beautiful relationship is really been awesome for me to see. So I'm glad I'm back in Jersey. I'm glad I'm back here with my parents or with my mom. But
let's make some noise for grandma.
Yeah, grandma, 100%.
Yeah. What do we do without grandma?
They're the best. They're the best.
They feed our kids what we tell them not to feed.
Correct.
They take them to a park too late. You know what I mean? I'm like, come on, abuelita.
Well, my wife and when my wife and I have a date night and
oh, that's awesome.
And when grandma, gotta have that. Well, when exactly you do, and when grandma's babysitting, when we're going home, and then, you know, 10:30, 11, 11:30, we're just joking ourselves like the kids are probably still awake, right?
For sure.
And then we get in,
for
and
sure.
It's 10:45. They're not just awake; they are wired.
Yeah. Back in the day when I was wired. My parents used to have date night. My grandma would have me up watching Sábado Gigante. You know Sábado Gigante? Yeah. Don Francisco. And I wasn't supposed to be up. It's like 8:10.
Correct.
But anyways. So, and then right before, were you in sports back then, like in high school? Like, what's your
my two sports that I both love to play and I follow are football and ice hockey.
Nice.
And like, you know, especially like I was physical, like I was always slow.
Yeah.
But I was a big guy.
So yeah, you're a tall guy, man. Yeah.
So they were just like, let's hit people. I was like, I can do that.
That's fun. Yeah.
So for football, I play both offensive tackle, defensive end.
Okay, nice.
And then hockey, I was a defenseman.
Oh,
so like
nice.
Big, like you're just like your job is to clear the front of the net. Nobody's allowed to touch your goalie, like that type of stuff. And I mean, I love sports. So I mean, it was my passion in high school. And I follow sports like really closely today.
But any like aspirations to go pro, or you just
I had enough self awareness.
Yeah, you were like, no,
politics. Good. One of the key things in life is to know yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, it was pretty clear in high school that I was like, I was a good player, but I was never gonna be. I didn't have the athleticism, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I didn't have the speed. I didn't have the strength. Mm-hmm. I just was never like, I was good, but I was never gonna be. So I played 1 year of Division III football.
Okay.
I made two tackles. So my entire college career football, I made two tackles. But I just played that first year. And then after, so Division III, and after I played that first year, I was like, hey, you know, football's not my life. It's not my career. And then time and investment was just too much. So I shifted over more to the academic world and also having a little fun in California.
Yeah, that sounds like me too, because I actually went to NJCU for baseball.
Oh, there you go.
I was a catcher.
There
so
you go.
I went to NJCU. I got recruited. I mean, they don't give scholarships for
D3. Yeah, exactly.
But they recruit you. They like try to like, hey, come over here, but you still got to pay tuition and all that. So I was like, all right, fine. And then I went, and then again, first year, loved it, got redshirted. But then I went into music. And
yeah, new passion, yeah.
So you start finding new things about yourself, but awesome.
Yeah.
So Milburn, you go to California. Yeah. You go to Pomona College.
Yep.
You majored in public policy at 18. Yeah. And then what made you choose Pomona College? Because did you apply to different schools?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, the biggest thing was just getting far away.
Yeah.
Like my thing, so Pomona, for folks who don't know, it's like in the suburbs of Los Angeles. So it's by like, without traffic, it's like 45 minutes outside of Los Angeles.
What year is this?
2002.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So
Height of the Lakers.
Ooh. Kobe, Shaq.
Of the Lakers.
Yeah.
Nets lost in 2002.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
And then I think the year before was AI.
When Allen Iverson stepped over Robert Horry, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And what's funny, just a sports guy, so Pomona has a funny connection. Greg Popovich, the Spurs coach, was the Pomona coach in the 1970s.
Oh,
and he still is like very connected. So like Popovich would sometimes come to campus, and then guys I knew went as like interns to coach for the Spurs, like right after graduating, they'd be like, you know, junior coach, whatever they call it. So like at that time, this was right as, you know, Duncan and Robinson, and Robinson was retiring and Duncan was being great. So Pomona was always about the Spurs, and he had the Lakers in LA. It was a great rivalry.
Well, that must have been crazy.
Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, you had really good stuff. But yeah, so I mean, I was just like, I wanted a liberal arts college.
Okay.
So liberal arts college, very small, and that type of thing where you can really like really get to know your fellow classmates, really know your professors, and really like build your critical thinking skills. So I was just like, I want a small college. It's not that's far away.
Yeah.
And someone told me go check out Pomona, and I loved it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I would never think. I mean, as a kid, especially coming up in a metro area like myself, I mean, I'm just thinking Rutgers. I'm thinking NYU. I'm thinking. So the aspirations to find something smaller is definitely like, you know, like you're tapped in, basically. You know what I mean? You understand. And does Pomona have like a, was it the public policy that really grabbed you to come in?
So public policy was a really good part of their program. It's a really cool system where there are actually four other colleges that you can take classes on. So it's kind of like the best of a small school and a big school.
Okay.
So if you add up all five colleges, there's like 8,000 kids on campus. But you're at a small college, it's less than 2,000. So to me, that was the best of all worlds, right? You got the benefits of a small school where you have these real deep personal relationships with your professors, but then you're part of this bigger campus where you can take interesting courses and learn things. And when I learned about that, I love that. And then also like the football thing. I was talking to the coach, and the coach was like, no scholarships, but hey, you want to come out here? is this something you're going to do? Yeah, there's a chance. So didn't end up, you know, wasn't my career, but I did talk to the football coach too back when I was playing.
Awesome.
So,
yeah. And is it true that your classmates elected you student commencement speaker?
They did. Yeah. So
how does everybody know, hey, we got to pick James over here?
So it was interesting. When I didn't even know this was a thing, but you know, about a month before graduation, they basically sent out an email to all the students that said, if you want to be the commencement speaker, you know, just raise your hand. And I think you wrote like a paragraph about why you wanted to do it. And then there are, I don't know, maybe 10 to 15 people that went in. And then every student in the senior class got to vote who they wanted to speak. So you didn't campaign for it. It wasn't like a thing where you were, so I didn't, you just, you did it. And then just one day.
That was my follow-up question. Was that the birth of
campaigning?
Of campaigning for you?
No, it wasn't, because that was just like, I don't know, but it would have been weird.
Okay.
But I'm very proud of that speech because, you know, our big thing was, you know, back in college was the Red Solo Cup, right? You know, you get your kegs, all stuff. So I snuck one on. And I hit it under the podium.
Okay.
And so I finished my speech for the graduation, and I pulled it out, and I was like, "Cheers for the class,
Van Wilder over here,
2006 with my you know PBR in a red solo cup."
Nice. It was good. That's awesome.
It was fun. It was fun.
And then these are just public facts that I found. So your senior thesis was about making safe, reliable contraception more widely available.
That's right.
Is that true?
That is true. Yeah.
So, at 21 years old, that's bold. I mean, that's really bold. You're thinking like 10 years ahead. Like, what made you get there? Like, what made you decide that thesis? Because I think that's like a DNA of, you know, where we are today. You know what I mean?
You're asking great questions. No one has ever asked me about my thesis before.
You are watching a master at work.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
That's right.
Thank you, Mark.
No, so, you know, did you gonna get a very personal answer for this? So, I think I was particularly interested in these questions of contraception and, like, you know, abortion and things like that, because my family had very different political views to some degree.
Okay.
So some members of my family are deeply pro-life Catholic.
Okay.
So they very much believe in, you know, the right to life and birth begins at conception. And then other members of my family were like, you know, started like, you know, women's liberation and really believed in the right to choice. And because I had, I think, these different, you know, I was, you know, you're just exposed to these different ideas growing up. You know, I was just always thinking about this question around, you know, right to choice, abortion, things like that. And, you know, I always thought, okay, well, what if we, you know, really encourage contraceptive use? Because then it's about people's choices, right?
For sure.
You can take control of your reproductive health. So that's where that idea came from. And I studied it, and it was interesting. It's not something I've worked on since college.
Yeah.
But it was something that I really, really was interesting for me and was a passion. And, you know, like, you know, you have these different opinions. You still have to have core beliefs on your end. Like, I strongly believe in the right to choice. And that's a really important thing, that every woman should have the ability to make that decision themselves.
Exactly.
Right. That is a personal decision.
Yeah.
And let's make contraceptive as easy, accessible as possible for every single person. And that's where it came from.
So, and affordable.
And affordable. That was the key.
I couldn't afford $20 pack of Trojans back then. I'll be honest.
No, 100%. That was actually, so you're thinking, that was the thesis.
Yeah.
That's what we wrote about, was that like affordability was this huge barrier to use. Access and affordability.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
You're bringing it up. This is now this 20 years later.
Yeah,
so.
now we're going to add it to the new, we're going to work on
correct.
That.
Correct, yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. So then you also worked at Harvard for the mayor's office in Boston. Is that true?
Yeah, so I I went to Harvard
for Pomona.
Went to Pomona. Then I spent a little bit of time in the Midwest.
Okay.
Then I went got a graduate degree at Harvard, master in public policy.
Nice.
And then I went and worked for basically 2 years for the basically mayor of Boston. So a guy named Mayor Menino.
Yes.
At the time, and that's
longest running mayor.
Yes.
Ever.
And I think, you know, the model, everyone's a little different, but I think really model of what I want to bring to Jersey City at the end of the day. You know, the thing about Menino that was special, his nickname was Mumbles.
Okay.
And his nickname was Mumbles because he couldn't like pronounce anything.
Wow.
He'd give a speech and like he couldn't understand his words. He was famous because he couldn't say the names of the Patriots players.
Wow.
So at one point, I forget what he said, but instead of calling him Gronkowski, he called him like Gradowski or something. Like some like, you know, BS like that. But what made Menino great was he cared about everybody in Boston. Everybody in Boston believed that the mayor cared about them. And he solved the little problems and then the big problems.
Yeah.
So like you call them, pothole gets filled. You know, trash gets picked up. Park isn't grass isn't cut, it gets mowed.
Yeah.
And that's where I want us to get to. We're not there yet in Jersey City, where we got a lot of work to do to get our city services better. But I got to see that. And then the other thing Menino did, which was so important, was he hired people because they were good at their jobs, not because of their political connections. Oh. So you have people in City Hall who were there because they were good at what they needed to do to make people's lives better, not because they knew the right person or they checked the right box off. And I got to see that too. So that's really the two big things that I think we didn't have. We didn't have this focus on maybe there are more big things we didn't have. Financial management being one of them. But like, we didn't have a focus on day-to-day city services. People were hired because of their political connections, not because of their ability to do the work.
Yeah.
And that's the fundamental stuff that we're trying to change.
Yeah, that's an amazing like backstory because also as a regular, citizen like myself, who I'm not really involved in politics. Yeah. I mean, I pay attention to what's going on, but also I think there's a lot of curious minds. Like, how does someone become mayor? Like, how does someone wanna take the idea of like, you know what, I think I can run a city and how do I get there? You know, it's not like you just there's like the public policy schools and stuff like that. But would you say Boston was the birth right there where you were like, okay, I think I could do this?
Not yet, because I'm not the type of person that thinks that like, oh, I can just do this because I exist. For Boston, it was two things. One was I love the work there. I maybe believe in the power of what a good mayor can do. Mm-hmm. So it really built that in me.
Yeah.
So this gets into a little bit of the story and the personal side.
Yeah.
So have this great, job, then move to Jersey City to be with Gabby, support her career, start thinking about what I want to do here. I start teaching. NJCU is Hudson County was where I taught first, and then NJCU. But then get diagnosed with cancer. And so you're 30. You think you have your whole life in front of you. I could die in a year. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I'm blessed that I got fully better. But that was don't wait. Because I think in my mind, I was like, I'm 30. I'm new to Jersey City.
Yeah.
I should, spend a year. Spend 10 years learning about Jersey City. Spend 10 years building up my skills. And I was like, if you think you have something to offer, don't wait. Life is short. You don't know what it's going to bring you. Just do it.
Yeah.
So that's what I got the diagnosis, and I probably within a month of the diagnosis, I was like, when I get better, I'm going to run for city council.
Yeah.
It was just like, the blinders are on. You have clarity. All the kind of bullshit just drops away. So for me, it was just clear. I knew what I wanted to do. But when I run for council, get on the council, then I think in the back of my mind, you think, okay, like mayor's the dream job. I think that's the job I want to do. But for me, I felt like I had to do a good job as a council person before I felt like I wanted to run for mayor.
Yeah.
So people talk to me about running for mayor in 2021. And I was honest with everybody. I'm like, I got very young kids and I'm a new council person. Like, I'm not going to run in 2021.
Yeah.
There were some very powerful people that sat with me and said, like, we want to think about you running. And I was just like, guys, I'm not interested. But then I thought I did a good job as a councilman. My kids got a little older and then decided to run in 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have notes about here. Yeah, you moved to Boston. You said you're beating me to the punch over here.
I'm moving forward.
Because I have here. So you were diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yep.
Can you explain to the public what is that for the ones who don't know?
Absolutely. So Hodgkin's lymphoma is a type of cancer, and basically we all have our white blood cells that are there to protect us. When your white blood cells basically go crazy and overdrive, start overproducing, basically all your lymph nodes, the bumps you feel here if you're sick, they basically start to expand.
Wow.
And so you basically have tumors that spread through your body through that. So I found it because I had a weird lump in my neck and it didn't go away for about a month.
Interesting.
And then I went and saw a doctor. And so it's one of those things where, when people talk about early detection, it really does matter.
It is important.
And that's safe, affordable access to healthcare. It's why, I believe in Medicare for All, because the last thing people should be doing is thinking about, well, I'm not going to go check this thing out because I don't know about the healthcare bills.
Exactly.
Like, did you hear about this crazy? Like, there's a guy who impaled himself hiking and he didn't want the helicopter to take him down because it was going to be too expensive.
Really? Like, but it sounds like the United States.
Correct, exactly.
That sounds like America.
I mean, people, we're the only country where people go bankrupt because of their medical bills.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So, well, my kind of tangent on Medicare for All, but basically, I get the bump, go see the doctor, they do a biopsy, so they take it out, they put it on their things. It's they diagnose it as cancer. Then you got to go through a whole series of tests. So you go through what are called PET scans. I have a funny story about PET scans. So what a PET scan is they inject you with like a little bit of like radioactive material to basically see where the cancer is in your body. And then they scan you. And they actually give you like a little card. And they're like, if you go through the like security at World Trade Center and if you set off like the nuclear detector.
Oh, no.
They're like, you have this card. No. So they literally give you a card in case you do anything. But then my wife, after I do the PET scan, so she was, we had been married for 6 months. So she started to play the Imagine Dragons Radioactive song for me. She was like,
funny.
She's hysterical.
She's a funny girl.
She's the best. So yeah, so she would be like, you know, oh, you just did your PET scan. Let me put on the Radioactive song for you.
To make you feel connected.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're going through it together. So and then, you know, got the treatment. So it was 4 months of chemo and then a month of radiation.
Okay.
And then thankfully, you know, all the tests were cure. And then I've been, you know, cancer-free for 10 years now. And
that's amazing. Let's make some noise.
Thank you.
It's the best. Let's
make some noise.
It's the best. And it's the beautiful part of it, many beautiful parts. But at 5 years, my oncologist basically said, you know, you're good to go.
Nice.
You know, sometimes folks have to do the scans their whole lives. But for me, after 5 years of scans, they were like, you're cured. Good. You're good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And is Jersey City, because I mean, I think a lot of people, I think in general, they don't even get tested because they're scared that they end up with a bill or anything. Is there anything that as a mayor can you do to help erase that fear?
100%. So a couple things. We're working with, we have a wonderful health director, Linda Ivor Green. We are going to expand our kind of early detection cancer screenings. I always support, there's an early prostate screening event that I'm always supportive of. In October, we're going to do a bunch of stuff on mammograms and breast cancer awareness.
Awesome.
That we've already kind of planning in the works. And then we can work to try to expand those opportunities for people and then make people aware of, you know, when they're free. You know, we've actually done a lot of positive work as a country on, you know, free and lower cost initial screenings.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to do. But I think our biggest thing is making it people know that
exactly.
You can have that access. Because your health is the most important thing in life.
For sure.
So it is definitely a thing I can do. And then I do think on the national side, again, supporting candidates that believe in Medicare for all is something that I always want to do because I want my candidates really pushing for that type of bold change in our healthcare system.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for that. Because, I mean, definitely, even myself, sometimes I'll feel something. I'm like, I got to go pay this copay.
Correct, exactly.
So I think once we figure out a system where we kill that fear of wanting to be able to go check in, I think we can save many lives. So
100%.
Thank you for being behind that.
Yeah,
I appreciate
100%.
It. So we'll go back to where you're a little before you become a councilman. You're going through treatment and is that the moment? I know, well, you said you were like, you know, I need to do something.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, get involved with the community. Was there someone specific or a moment that cause that inception in your brain?
100%. So I, you know, always interested in politics, you know, come to Jersey City, you start to learn about the local community. But there was this thing that I just can never get over. It was a tax abatement that was given out to a developer. So that's when the developer gets a tax break. And there are times where a tax break for a developer actually you can be good for the community if they're giving you affordable housing, if they're giving you these things that really make a difference. But in this case, right, the developer got a 20-year tax break.
Wow.
They were selling their condos for over $1 million. $1 million a pop. And they weren't giving us affordable housing. They weren't giving us any community benefits. No union labor, no school, no park.
But isn't it by law? I mean, the rumor is lower class, middle class, like by law, if a developer comes in, they have to set aside a certain amount of affordable rooms.
No.
That's not true.
No. So basically, what we're trying to do is make that the law.
Okay.
Right now, there's a big fight went on the council, and we had to fight the former mayor to ultimately get this done. But in 2021, we passed a law that says a developer has to set aside some apartments for working class and middle class families, but only if they get a benefit from the city in the form of what's called a zoning change. They get to build higher, build more.
Okay.
If you don't have that, they can still build just luxury only.
Wow.
But this was even worse, right? It's one thing for a developer to come in and say, well, I'm not getting a tax break, but I'm not going to give you affordable housing. In this case, they got the tax break and they didn't do the affordable housing, right? But then I looked at where they did and they made donations to a super PAC that supported the former mayor. And I was like, oh, now we know what happened, right?
Yeah.
The reason they got a sweetheart deal was the pay-to-play politics. And so when I found that out, I mean, I got mad. I got livid.
I'm mad right now.
And this was the thing, right? And ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, the former mayor had a super PAC that accepted something worth $6 to $7 million worth of money from developers. So, you know, to me, that was just the wrong way to do politics. And the other thing was I didn't see anyone really pushing him and challenging him and saying, you know, this isn't the right approach for the city. And then so to take this a step forward, I get on the council, me and Councilman Lavara, who's now back on the council, we were the two council people that really fought to change this affordable housing law. We initially lost, but then someone sued. The mayor's law got thrown out, and then we were able to kind of put our new law in. And now that law has helped get hundreds of affordable units either built or are coming to be built.
Okay.
And a lot of people opposed it when we did it, and they said, well, you're going to, you know, no one's going to build it. But, you know, ultimately we were right that it has helped get build more affordable homes in Jersey City. And then we want to go further now. We want to make sure that there's, you know, stronger laws to mandate more affordable housing. You always have to be thoughtful as you design public policy to avoid unintended consequences, to make sure that you're not pushing something that ultimately is harmful. But for me, that's really important that we have more affordable homes in Jersey City.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for getting behind that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think I just moved to Jersey City about, we're going on 3 years now.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the city just calls me. Like, the baseball thing, I end up at NJCU.
I love it.
I start dating a girl. She's living in Jersey City.
Yeah.
And then I start, you know, doing a lot of works and events out here because I'm also an event planner. I do a lot of music events.
I'm
in the music game.
Yeah.
So seeing Jersey City as vibrant and eclectic of different genders and races and cultures, I mean, I think to be have a nice life here and affordable living is not easy. I understand the position you're in, but I appreciate when someone's very vocal about
I appreciate that.
Provide
Thank
that.
You.
So let's go. I know we're in the councilman area, but I'm very curious about your time also at NJCU.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in in becoming, you were an adjunct.
Yes.
You wasn't a full-time professor.
Correct. Adjunct, yep.
So explain what was your time, what was that time going, and where were you already like, okay, I think I'm going to get into politics at that time?
No, because I started teaching before the cancer diagnosis.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe in the long run, but not then. No, so, you know, I moved to Jersey City again because Gabby got this great job in Newark, and I was like, I'm supporting her. And I was looking to think about what to do here. And I've always had a passion for teaching. I've always had a passion for public policy and politics. I was like, well, why don't I start to teach as an adjunct? So my first was Hudson County Community College and then NJCU. Nice. And then I added St. Peter's about 3 years later.
Wow.
And honestly, the way I got both those jobs was just cold calling people. So sometimes you got to
get lucky. Hustle.
You
got to
hustle.
Camera?
Hustle.
Give me the camera.
No,
you got to hustle, guys.
So I met for NJCU. I found out who the chair of the political science department was, Professor Louise Stanton, who's a gem and is a personal friend now.
Awesome.
And I literally like reached out to her and I said, hey, I have a master of public policy. I work for the mayor in Boston. I'd love to be an adjunct professor and teach young people. You know, do you have anything? And we met for coffee. We went at, remember the old word on Newark Avenue.
Okay.
I think Newark Avenue still had cars back then.
Yeah. They
used time when I was there. We had a coffee and she was like, she kind of felt me out and she's like, we have an opening. Are you interested in teaching? And so, I signed up to teach and I taught, 2 to 3 courses a semester at NJCU and then, a couple at Hudson County Community College. And it was like intra-American politics, campaigns and elections. But I loved it. I have great stories from that. So first of all, my chief of staff now, she's chief of staff for the whole city of Jersey City. She was a student of mine in 2015 at NJCU. Awesome. She's on the soccer team.
Yeah. And she's Colombian.
Colombian, that's right.
Big shout out to my Colombians out
that's
there.
That's right. That's right.
With our thoughts and prayers for everybody.
Yeah, 100% with the earthquake.
100%.
Yeah. Fully supporting folks. Yeah, she's I think the first Latina, first LGBTQ community member to be chief of staff in Jersey City.
Awesome.
So she's kind of trailblazer and a lot of firsts. But she was just in my course. And I was like, oh, she's real smart. She's on top of it. She's really talented. And then I wasn't teaching her 2-3 years later, and I reached out and I said, hey, you want to intern for me? And that's how it started.
Awesome.
And then she became an intern. But so relationship with her, a couple of my students are now on JCPD, right?
Nice.
So people that I taught, and we talked about policing in those courses. We talked about, over-policing and what does community policing look like? They're now police officers in Jersey City. It's kind of awesome to see your students and where they go over time.
Exactly.
Some have gotten into politics. Some have run for office.
Wow.
One of my students, credits the class of like really giving him the inspiration to run for office and challenge the political machine. So it was really an incredible experience. I always say that I love teaching at all three schools, but NJCU was special. Hudson County was great. And then St. Peter started in 2018.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Cause what year was NJCU?
2015 was the first year I started teaching.
I was already out by then.
Yeah.
Cause when I heard you were NJCU, I was like, damn, did I have him as a
teacher?
Teacher
or professor,
Was he not a professor? Solomon, Professor Solomon.
I mean,
it doesn't ring a bell.
The best part is, you're like, I was out. You just run into your students when you're campaigning.
Yeah.
So like, there's a City Line Church. One of my students is in the choir.
Awesome.
When I'm at Journal Square, one of my students always like comes by because that's their commute path. So when you're in the campaign world, you just run into your students all the time, which is great.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's I love that story. We're at the team that you built. You just spoke about Laura Bustamante. Yeah. You have also have Isaac Smith.
Yeah.
You have Caitlin Gavin, Stu Thomas, Dr. Dia Bryant, and Anthony Ambrose. Explain real quickly, like, what was your thought process on on hiring these individuals?
That's great. So for folks, too, like, there's really, like, two core groups that the mayor hires. You hire your mayor's office team, and then you hire your cabinet, right? So for the cabinet, that's, you know, Ambrose, he's head of public safety, police and fire.
Correct.
Linda Ivergreen, head of health and human services. It's Andy Kaplan, our infrastructure director. And there's a few more.
Yeah.
But that one is you're just looking for experts, people who know their divisions and are good leaders. So, you know, Director Ambrose is a good example, right? He was a public safety director in Newark, and he helped drive crime down in Newark, but doing it the right way, right? By partnering with the community, by, you know, making sure that our officers were upholding a high standard of conduct, but supporting them when they did so. So, you know, for me, you wanted to hire the best. And when I think you look at my hires, the people that we hired, these are not political hires. These aren't guys who, you know, got the job. In fact, Ambrose donated to my opponent. He donated to McGreevy. I'm calling him out on the podcast.
We forgive you.
But we didn't hire people because of their political connections. We hired people because they'd be the best for their job. And my bet is that 2-3 years from now, we're going to see that. We're going to feel that. People are just going to say, oh, the government works a lot better than it did 3-4 years ago because we put the right people in place. And then for the mayor's office, you know, you want to hire people that are core to your priorities. So the people who you think, hey, they can deliver. So the three kind of core people there, obviously, we're four core people. We mentioned Laura already. We have two deputy mayors, and we have Isaac Smith, who is our policy director. So for me, and there's a little bit of social media chatter about these deputy mayors, the thing is, they are the ones who are supposed to drive change on the things that really matter. And I picked two because they were two. One was affordable housing, because we have to build more affordable housing. We have to keep people in their apartments. And that's Keshav's job. And then it was education and young people. And, you know, my view is that young people have been left behind in the city, that we didn't prioritize young people in the way that we ran City Hall. We cut rec services. We didn't have a great summer jobs program. Actually, we had a good one, and then it got dwindled down year after year after year. I can't tell you the number of grandmothers, guardians, moms, dads that I talked to that said, there's nothing for my kid to do in the summer. So Dr. Dia Bryant, her job is to push for change for our kids, set up our summer jobs program, bring in philanthropy. And then the last is Isaac. Isaac's our policy director. Isaac's been born and raised Jersey City from the Greenville section. And, you know, he and I have worked together now for 4 or 5 years. And Isaac just knows the city like the back of his hand. He knows everything about it. And he brings that perspective of, you know, how do I help Jersey City? And he went to graduate school. He got the same degree as I did, Master of Public Policy, specifically so he could come back to Jersey City and help deliver positive change for people.
Wow.
So that's the core of the team in the mayor's office to drive the positive change. And then you have the directors across the city that are the subject matter experts.
Okay. Yeah. So, but public policy, right, that's like the subject to really kick it off in a sense.
Yeah.
If there's somebody out there who's like interested in being in politics and stuff, you could say, hey, go to public policy. Start there.
I believe that because you need to know what you're trying to do. You need to understand the impacts of the work that you're doing.
For sure.
I would also just say the other thing too, work on a campaign. Even as a volunteer, you just learn. Knock on a door. Talk to somebody. There's nothing better than, okay, I knock on someone's door. I have basically 30 seconds to make a positive impression and earn your vote and support. It's that quick. And you know, as a volunteer on a campaign, there's no better experience than volunteering and knocking on doors.
What gives you that push? Like, what gives you that push, even for councilmen? Like, what gives you that energy to, like, I'm going to try to get your vote, but nobody knows who you are. You know what I mean? Like, where does that energy come from?
I think there's two things. I mean, I think first for the councilman side, I mean, that really was driven in this kind of like, you know, rebirth of like, I just had, you know, a life-threatening diagnosis at age 30. And I'm blessed with that second chance at life. And I get to, you know, I don't know, driven by it, right? Like, yeah, like, you know, I got lucky, you know? I know people who didn't get lucky, right? Mm-hmm. Who you had diagnosed. I've talked to, once you have cancer, a lot of folks will reach out to you when they get a diagnosis. And you always pay it forward. You give them all your advice, all your support. And from that, there are people that who have, you know, gotten better and are living beautiful, healthy lives. And then there are others who haven't. And so you understand how lucky you are to get that second chance at health and life. So that was that drive in 17. And then that drive has kept going, right? So it doesn't go away when you've had that. Probably a little less than it was when you're through the treatment. The other thing for me that was crucial is having my kids, having my daughters,
yeah.
right? And you think about what city you want them to grow up in. Like, this city genuinely has given so much to me, right? It's the city that I was in when I got nursed back to health. The city, you know, Gabby and I were, we got engaged. We have built our whole family and our whole lives here. And you all my students are from, right? All the students I taught. And they want these beautiful lives.
For sure,
you want
yeah.
that for your kids. And then I just thought the old way of politics wasn't working. The old machine way of politics was not delivering for people. And so when this race was coming on, you know, I saw the whole political machine, the whole establishment getting behind one candidate. I was like, that's just not the way it should be done.
But are you talking to people? Like, are you like in a forum or something? Or
well,
like,
so
are
different things. I mean, I think there are different things. For the mayor's race, I'll say, for the city council race, it was really Gabby and I, right?
Okay.
Small group, just the two of us. For the mayor's race, at that point, you know, I had a team around me,
okay.
people that I believed in, people that care, people that are part of the core team. And so you're going back and forth. But I took a long time to make the decision whether I was going to run or not. My team was waiting on me for
yeah.
a long time because I was genuinely torn. I was thinking about the impacts on my kids and the family. So it took a really long time to make that decision. But once I made the call, I am if you're in, you got to be all in.
Yeah, you have to.
Once you take your time to make a decision. But once the decision is made, you got to burn the ships behind you and you got to go.
Wow. Because so, yeah, I live on yeah. a motto, anything's possible, then possible is only temporary.
Correct.
So I can imagine yep. just making the decision and getting into the game of politics and knowing, you know, there are people who are not going to like you anymore,
Correct.
But then there's going to be new people who do like you,
Correct.
Who love you.
Yeah.
How do you handle beefs?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's like the truth. Like, how do you handle someone who, like, you were working with, but
yeah.
behind your back, you know, they hate you? Like,
yeah.
Like, how do you deal with that?
It's a really good question. And it's something that I continue to, I think, grow with.
Okay.
You know, the cliche is true. You have to develop thick skin in politics.
Okay.
You just have to. People who are going to say the craziest shit about you. I always say what's so weird is there are people you've never met. And some of those people will become convinced you're God's greatest gift to the earth.
Yeah.
And then some people will be convinced you're the devil incarnate.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it is a bizarre experience because you've never met these people. Mm-hmm. They've literally never had a conversation with you, even two words, but they're convinced sometimes that you're amazing
yeah.
and then sometimes that you're awful. And it's a funky thing that I've just learned to have that thicker skin. With beefs, I think the thing that helps me the most is just knowing what my mission is.
Yeah.
And my mission is the people of Jersey City. So part of the thing in politics is you have to sit down and look someone in the eye and cut a deal with someone who has said crazy, the worst stuff about you.
Yeah.
And vice versa. You have to put that behind you because it's not about you. And just remembering that over and over again, like you don't own the title, right? You are gifted the title from the people.
True.
And they can take it away from you,
sure.
you know, exactly. at any point. And I think that you just have to have that in your, it has to be in your bones. I don't have any other yeah. way to put it.
Is that
in your bones, it's got to be there.
Would you say like,
Yeah.
does your family have like, and when I say family, like your
yeah.
parents or
yeah.
like aunts, uncles, anybody that like
yeah.
showed you how to get tough skin? Because I think it could be taught, but also
yeah,
you got to kind of be like raised in it.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I had family that were involved in the world of government, but never running for office.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a different thing. You know, I think the first thing I come back. Both my grandmothers were tough as hell.
Okay, there we go.
You know, one was a Polish grandma, right?
Oh man,
and the Polish grandmas they don't play.
I have Polish friends in Garfield, New Jersey. That's Poland.
That's New Jersey Polonia. It is. No,
so
you get your kielbasa.
They're
tough. That is a tough woman. And then my grandmother, my father's side, you know, she had major health issues. You know, major emphysema, like big smoker,
okay.
you know, real issues with her lungs, and so. They're both tough in different ways, so I think they really show me that. You know, my mom's pretty tough, too. You know, my mom was the first woman, she's a doctor. She was the first woman doctor
amazing.
In a lot of spaces. So you have to build some toughness there because you're
yeah.
going to have a lot of men questioning your credentials, your ability to be in that type of space. So I do think I saw that toughness from them.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's gotten into me. And what I pride myself on is really trying to be a happy warrior.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think you ever see me doing Twitter beef with people. Like, you don't see me going after people. You know, it's just, to me, it's like, that's not the mission, right? The mission is to take care of people. Does someone say something that pisses me off? Yeah. But why would I engage in that? That's not about making Jersey City better.
Exactly.
So I really do try to stay away from that. And maybe it's less drama, but
yeah.
that's okay. Like,
it's weird because some people kind of want to see you do
correct.
That.
They do.
Which is like a yeah. total like oxymoron because it's like, You want the person who leads wherever you're from to be professional,
yeah.
kind. I mean, look
yeah.
who's running
the country.
The country. I mean, I'm embarrassed to go to Europe and tell you that I'm American when all they know is this guy that it's at the Oval Office.
I know. And it's, I mean, it was for me the hardest to explain to my daughter. I mean, my 8-year old, she's old enough to get it. And she's like, why is Trump doing this? And I don't have a good answer.
Yeah.
I was like, you shouldn't. You shouldn't say those things, right? And I get, you know, and this gets back to the frustration, right? People are rightfully angry. They're angry at the direction of the country, the direction of the state, and the direction of the city.
Yeah.
And they have a right to be angry. So I get that anger. But the way Trump expresses it, it's only at the end of the day, it's just for him,
mm-hmm.
right? He's channeled all that anger so he can make more money. His people can make more money.
Yeah.
And so it's actually about making other people's lives better.
When he won, did that like...
Which time?
Well, I said the first time, because the second time, I don't even know if we're still... I don't know. The first time, did that like... I'm assuming disappointed you, like, because you're not in politics in 2016 yet.
No.
But also, I'm assuming that gives you a fire to like
100%.
If this guy's in office, I mean,
I gotta do
something.
Yeah, it's true. Or any one of us can do it. No, 100%. I mean, look, I was definitely always of the opinion. It was actually, I was always of the opinion that Trump really could win, and I think I remember it. There's this moment. So. You know, when he first started, he said that those heinous racist things about Mexicans. And I was at a wedding with one of my friends, and she's married to a Mexican-American guy. And you could just see from him how hurtful that what he was saying was. And so first I was like, oh, like, we got to take this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But then you could also see that, like, there were people that were getting into it. And there were people that were saying, yeah, like, this is the direction the country needs to go in. And again, there's legitimate frustration at a broken system, but then it's being targeted at people that don't have a lot of power and money and support. So when I always thought he could win. And then obviously when he wins, you're like, oh shit, we got to get going. Like we got to do it. And then, you know, I worked hard in those 4 years. Obviously, you know, I helped support candidates running for Congress, running for Senate. Obviously supported Biden in 2020, you know, felt like I did my part. Then, you know, Biden wins. And then, you know, just the honest thing is, you know, he betrayed all of us when he decided to run for re-election when he clearly couldn't.
Yeah.
Right. And so obviously we got Trump back again. But what I hope people see is that, you know, he said, I'm running to make prices lower. And then
the only
thing he did was make it more expensive.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're almost running out of time. Yeah. I have we're having a great convo. I have so many things. But I want to get to the people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're in office. Yeah. I think we'll have another interview where we talk about more.
I'm happy to come back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But. I went to our Jersey City Reddit, which is infamous to know as it's a dangerous spot to be in. I mean, if you're reading, going down there, there's some people.
You need the thick skin.
Yeah, that's where you build thick skin. Yeah. Go to Reddit /r/ Jersey City.
Yeah.
But I asked them, I said, you know, I'm interviewing you, and then we got over 150 questions.
Okay.
I'm not doing 150 questions, but I picked out, I'm going to say these two right here.
Okay.
They really stood out the most and got a lot of the upvotes.
Upvotes, yeah.
So we'll start off with Andres Rodriguez. Big shout out to Andres Rodriguez on Reddit. He said, every affordable unit this city builds is a rental that somebody else owns. The public puts in 6 figures a unit. The developer ends up with the asset and the family leaves with what they came in with.
Mm-hmm.
So name one project this term where the city's money puts a deed in a resident's hand. Yep. If there is not one, say why not.
It's a great question and super knowledgeable about the facts. So he is right when we do this affordable project.
Correct.
You know, the rents are affordable, right? We're really committed to projects that have rents at $1,000 a month and $1,500 a month.
Correct.
But at the end of the day, the developer does still own that asset, right? Mm-hmm. The building and the unit. And the family can make money because they don't have to spend all their money on rent, but they're not building like Masswell.
Exactly.
So our big picture approach here, and we're getting started on it, is we want to take abandoned and vacant lots across the city, turn them into housing for public servants that's rent to own. So basically, you know, take any block in Jersey City, any block. You're going to have a lot that's vacant. You're going to have a home that's abandoned, maybe deteriorating, or maybe construction stopped midway. We as a city basically want to take ownership of some of those lots. And then once we want to basically build it, you know, probably a two family, you know, duplex. And then the people who would get it would be public servants. So teachers, cops, firefighters, nurses, public servants, and then rent to own. So at the end of the day, they get that deed and they build that well. We also want to work with the state on more and better home ownership programs.
Okay.
So we're doing a project to redesign Holland Gardens. So that's the housing project just north of Holland Tunnel. And we need to do it because the current conditions are a disaster.
Yeah.
There's black mold. There's boilers that break. In winter, there's no heat. And the residents deserve, like, the best conditions possible.
For sure,
so we've given a promise that the residents will all get to go back when it's redone, which I understand people are skeptical of because those promises were made on Montgomery. They're made at Lafayette, and then they didn't hold true to them. But yeah. I'm saying it's on record that I'm making the promise those residents get to go back. We added a home ownership component to that. Awesome. So there's going to be, I forget the number of units off the top of my head, but there's going to be home ownership in that project as well. So those are a couple of the ways we're doing it to try to get, you know, real wealth into people's hands as well.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So next question we have here, they didn't leave their name. Their username is @agreeable5663. So here's your shout out.
Yeah.
They said, what are your plans to help Rain in the Board of Education? Yeah. If there's nothing he can do, what can his leadership suggest to the people of Jersey City on what we should do?
Yeah, 100%. So just like where we are with Board of Ed, right? I have daughters that go to public school here in Jersey City. We need strong public schools, but the board hasn't been delivering that. And that's really in two ways. The first is they're not getting doing enough to educate kids.
Mm-hmm.
Our graduation rates are not good. Our math and reading are going down, not up. And then separately, the budget is out of control there. They've raised taxes by $200 million. Obviously, we've been in a tough spot of the city. We have to raise taxes. We're raising it $60 million. They're doing $200 million. So on people's bills, it's $200 million over 2 years. So they're really harming people's finances, but not delivering a good product.
Correct.
So my job as mayor, I don't have any direct control, right? I can't order the board to do this or veto their bill here. But my thing is to get involved in letting people know that when we come up to election time. So there's an election this November. There's, I think, 12 candidates running for office. Research all those candidates. See who was on the board. See who's new, who's offering real change. And I will use my voice to make sure everybody has real insight into the candidates and into the race for Board of Education. So my thing is the way to create real change is to make sure we're electing good board members and really pushing for positive change.
Awesome. Well, There's your answer, guys.
I appreciate it.
Those are two questions. And then real quickly, you recently did a town hall for the culture and nightlife. Yep. I couldn't make it. I was on vacation. I was in Florida.
Hell yeah.
I was having a good time. We was in the pool. Good. We was in the beach. I miss Jersey City. But I missed that. But that meeting was definitely essential because, I mean, Jersey City, we are known as the little brother to New York City, which is the mecca of all nightlife and entertainment. So from your perspective, what did you get out of that meeting? Yeah. And what did you surprised?
Yeah, you thought about something new and things like that.
So
it was organized by Sasha and Leslie.
Yep.
And we had kind of gotten in touch because they were going to host a Juneteenth event, or they did host a Juneteenth event. And initially, the venue was telling them, well, you guys can't bring a speaker. And they're like, well, we bring a speaker. What are you talking about? And so they flagged it for us. We got involved and we were able to work it out. And obviously, they had a great event. So they were like, hey, look, this brings up bigger questions.
True.
What's the partnership between the city and the arts community, city and nightlife? And what are we doing? So that was where it came from. A couple of things that were really important. First was just like we kind of organized on the spot like a committee to help talk to the city about how to foster good nightlife in Jersey City.
Awesome.
I joked. I was like, I'm a middle-aged dad. You don't want me planning the nightlife of Jersey City? Nope. That is, those days are over.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever wanted me to do it, but you certainly don't
know.
When
was the last time you went to like a bar for a drink? Do you remember?
I go to bars for drinks to like, we'd be hanging out with people.
Yeah.
When was the last time I was like at a dance club? That's a long time.
Okay.
Like last time I was like out dancing for a long time. It's
I hear you.
It's been a while.
I hear you.
Bar drink, I'll do that. But, so we did kind of on the spot because I realized that, you know, we didn't have that connection to people who really understand the nightlife of Jersey City to help advise those of us who are setting the rules and the policies and trying to foster it. We talked about enforcement, right? That to the example of the Juneteenth event, enforcement has to be thoughtful. You have to use critical thinking. You can't just say, hey, you complain, I'm going to enforce without thinking about the broader impacts.
Right.
So we made a real commitment to listen on enforcement. And then the third thing that I think was the best was the faces in the room. Because when I do community meetings, there tends to be like the usual folks that come to the meetings, which God bless, like they're engaged in the community, they care about it. But the fact that Sasha and Leslie did it, the fact that it was at Pet Shop, the fact that like it was advertised on different channels, we got a set of folks that oftentimes don't go to community meetings.
For sure.
And building that connection where they feel like, hey, look, I can talk to the mayor and ask him a question. And then he can you know, answer and we can talk to each other. I really feel like having those lines of communication are going to be so important to like really fostering culture in Jersey City.
I think it's like a, it's a, it's a, it's a gift and a curse, because the gift is we feel like we're, you know, we can connect with you at a personal level, but the curse is that now that we feel like we can connect with you, you better make it happen.
You better deliver.
So
I
applaud you for,
appreciate it.
For creating that line, the avenue for people, because I'm also involved in Jersey City nightlife. Yeah. I curated a music festival last year called Loud Garden in Lincoln Park.
Oh, awesome.
We had over 2,000 artists. Beautiful. I mean, sorry, 2,000 people. We had 16 artists perform and like in a full like Coachella style stage.
That's awesome.
So, and I feel like sometimes everybody just goes to New York, you know what I mean? And I think it starts with us within the community and then getting the backing from the mayor that, hey, listen,
we want you here.
You don't have to go to the city. Yeah. Jersey City's nightlife and entertainment and culture and music and arts is superb, and you don't really know about it because you 100%. Prefer to go to our neighbors, which the tolls are a different story.
Correct.
Anyways,
yeah, that's right.
All right. I had so many questions.
I know.
I had so many.
We'll come back.
We'll come back. Thank you. But lastly, I just wanted to we got to do the rapid fire.
Let's do it.
Just to get you, just so the people know who you really like.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So real quick, Yankees or Mets?
Yankees. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I was a Yankees fan. It's a sad story. I was a Yankees fan.
So the Mets traded my favorite player in the
Night Soto?
Years ago.
Okay.
Wally Backman, 1980s.
Wally Backman.
And I got mad at the Mets, and I've never forgiven them for trading Wally Backman.
Well, my story is I had a cousin. He unfortunately passed away when he was 12 years old, and he was a big Mets fan. So I became a Mets fan.
Yeah, you died. Yeah,
in honor of him.
Yeah, of course. Beautiful.
It's been a struggle.
I know. Well, hey, the Knicks did it, so.
It might be the year of the Knicks. Yeah. All right, so, but Knicks or Nets?
Knicks.
Knicks. I'm a Nets fan. Sorry.
And they moved to Brooklyn.
I know. That was so sad. Giants, Jets, or Eagles? I don't know.
No, I'm actually a Steelers fan. So
Respect.
I'm going off the board.
Respect.
I'm going off the board. I'm a Steelers
Terrible
fan.
Terrible towel.
Yeah.
Devils or Rangers? Or
Devils.
Oh, yeah, there we go. We got Devils fans
That's
in the
right.
building. Infamous question. Pork roll or Taylor Ham?
Taylor Ham. North Jersey.
Yes, sir. Is there a Central Jersey?
No.
So it's Clip that.
Nonsense.
Clip that.
You tell I'm never running for governor. Nonsense.
All right. This might be controversial. Okay. Best pizza in the city.
Oh, well, this is controversial. So it depends on, like, you know, my kids, what I'm at. Okay.
Yeah.
I love Pizza Masters.
Okay.
Pizza Masters in the Heights is awesome.
Okay.
My kids are huge fans of Carmine's.
Okay.
So 8th and Brunswick, that's their spot. And then, look, fancy date night, I go to Raza. So those are the three.
Can I suggest one for you?
Yeah, please.
Artichoke.
Artichoke is good.
Artichoke, I've been a little love bit. Artichoke. I don't know what it is, but it's something in there. Your Gia Gelato order.
Oh, there you go. The Greek wrap.
Greek wrap?
Yeah.
Ooh, have you been to Greece?
I've never been.
Highly suggest.
I
Hit
love
me
to
up.
Go.
I'll give you some recommendations
please.
Where to
yes.
go. Path or ferry?
Oh, path.
Path. All right. The last show you binged on.
Last show I binged on. Oh. You know what? I just started watching an AMC show that's really good, Dark Winds.
I never heard that one.
It's like a like Navajo Nation, like crime stuff. It's been really good.
You're like a crime guy, like docu crimes.
Yeah, the shows, like you know, like you know, thrillers. You know, like whodunit, that type of stuff. Yeah.
Suggestion on Netflix: watch my very toxic love story.
Oh, there you go. Toxic love story.
You will love that. I think the wife will love that too.
There you go. Drama.
I love the. Oh, that one's still thinking about it right now with the mayor.
Yeah.
Most used emoji.
Most used emoji. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, it's boring. But it's true.
What's your go-to song on Spotify or Apple Music?
That's a good one. Well, so my kids are really into Die Die, the Shakira World Cup song.
Oh,
so
I love that song.
We have been playing that like nonstop.
Yeah.
They got really into it, which is super cool. My old school pump pump song was Eye of the Tiger. Like
Ooh.
Old school. So like before debate, I got that in the earbuds.
Oh, that's an interesting fact.
Like old school. Yeah.
Wow. You did a lot of debates in college?
Yeah. Well, no, not in college. Oh, in the election.
Of course.
I did too many of them.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I could picture you like Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, 100%.
And then like
that's my
pumped.
Focus song. That's the focus.
Wow. And then are you early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Night owl.
Yeah.
You're in the office late?
I'm around evenings. I try to be out of the office. I try to be in the community, but like, I'm not a morning person. So yeah.
Okay.
Night
and last question. If you were not mayor, what would you be doing?
If I were not married? Oh my God.
No, mayor.
Oh, mayor. God,
sorry.
So mayor. Look at that.
Sorry, man. Sorry,
gaps. Yeah, no. All right. Not mayor. What would I be doing? I had to think a little bit about it because, you know, if I didn't win the election, I was like, what's going to happen? I mean, you know, for me, we want to be back like teaching and engaging with young people. Like college is for me the age that I love to connect with young people on because they're full critical thinkers who are just like thinking about, okay, how do I make the world a better place? How do I engage with it? So I'd love to be back, you know, St. Peter's, Hudson County, you know, now it's Kane, Jersey City, I think it's called now. That's where I'd love to be, whether it's, you know, doing some teaching, doing some research. That's where I'd love to be.
That's awesome. Well, everybody, thank you so much. Let's get a round of applause. Yeah, Mayor, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor James Solomon.
I appreciate it, man. One day. I appreciate it, man.
Where can we find any information? I mean, I know we can find you, but people don't know.
Because of, I'm Solomon for JC on all social media platforms. So find me there. And then follow the city of Jersey City. Other really important reason to do that is all our emergency alerts. So put my mayor hat on for a second. Yes. Flooding storms, snowstorms, you know, God forbid we have a hurricane or something like that. Like, you want to be fully informed. So follow city of Jersey City on all social media platforms and sign up for emergency alerts, which is alert JC. JC.
And thank you for updating the 911 center.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
When I first moved here, I called 911 for some reason. And they never showed up. So I love the correct. The progress and where we're going, and thank you so much. Thank you for being for the people and all the people. I know you deal with a lot of beef out there, especially with the tax hike and everything. I mean, we could have talked about it, but I feel like you've talked about it so much in other platforms. So I really wanted to bring a more personal
side. I appreciate that. I mean, it's great to have a personal conversation, but the thing is, you know, I'm proud we do 100 community meetings in our first year, so we've done over 50 so far. So, like, if you have questions, you're like, hey, I had one of those Reddit questions they can answer, I want to talk about the tax increase. Like, I'm out there. So come find me. Come to one of the community meetings. Come chat.
And come correctly. Don't be beefing with my guy here. If not, you know what I mean? He wears Nikes every day. He's a New Balance OG.
I am. That's right.
Well, awesome. This was your HuffPost podcast with our mayor, James Solomon. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Make sure you follow us on HuffPost. You already know where we go. Follow me at oneday.mp333. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Brave Studios, Bravery Studios. Thank you, Marv, the whole team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
So much. Appreciate it. Ring on, got me looking like a gun. Riding through the town, paint gloss on the car. Blacked out the window, smelling half of the jar.